everyone.
And I'm Betty Lou. That's Robert.
You came one other time, didn't you? Long ago?
Online.
When we were down at the reunions at the Budget of Living Center?
Did
the what? Nope, I'm mistaken.
No, I remember Faces pretty good. He's a new one.
Okay.
Nice to know, huh?
So, we'll see where we are. Who do you, Betty Lou? Who are you really? You're trying to talk and write. I can't do two things at once. Who are you really?
Yeah.
Actually, I can do many things at once. I just can't do the thinking stuff. Like two at a time. So, this summer, I mentioned some of you. This summer, I'm going to, it's just started kind of popping through. What I want to do is I want to do two things. I want to help all of us begin to understand. We use the word diamond, our diamond essence, and I have a story from the 70s about that. There is a way in which we tend to see ourselves as what we are not. We tend to define ourselves in what we are not, what's not working now, what we think we don't have, you know, and where our limits are. And so we're going to play with that a little bit today. Tonight's class workshop is about your authentic you. And I'm just going to start out by saying we're all created perfect, period. And I could say that's the end of the story. Our tendency, though, is to look at our own self-defined or worldly-defined imperfections or lack of perfection. And then we actually make it up in mind, body, and spirit that we are imperfect. That what is natural is not enough, or it's not good enough, or it doesn't fit with what the norm is, or somehow it isn't valued, or blah, blah, blah. We can't survive on who we are naturally. And I'm just looking around this room, and I have an awareness, to some degree, of all of us here, except for you, except I know you're perfect too. So whether you like it or not, I already know that. Now, in my own experience, when I have interacted with people throughout my life, and especially as a quote-unquote counselor, therapist, all that jargon, gobbledygook, you know, we name ourselves, right? As a matter of fact, my loving reminder tomorrow is about some names. I named therapist myself. I saw myself as this function and this and this and this. You might want to look at it because I think it's interesting. And then I'm asking, so what parts do you play? Because from my standpoint, we come in absolutely 100% unlimited and then define ourselves by whatever parts we're expected to play in the situation in which we find ourselves, which I actually see it, a situation in which we call ourselves into being with the particular body we show up with the particular family experience we show up with. Not as victims, but literally come in ready to go to learn what we need to learn, teach what we need to teach, accomplish what we want to accomplish, show up in our own unique way. And then our tendency is to learn from the world around us as they kind of splat on us. I call it splat, mud and whitewash, all that stuff. We tend to become that which they claim us to be, name us to be. And we say, well, gosh, since you're my gods, I mean, you're in, you know, oh my God, you know, you're in this big body, you must know what the hell is true about me. And instead, what we do, I mean, when we do that, we say, okay, you know, now I'm going to play that part for you. Instead of stand up and say, you know what, I remember my original choice to come in and be the being I'm to be to help you, family, this world, to heal or to wake up. In my case, I'd probably say awaken, or I've used over my lifetime, actualize your, you know, authentic self kind of thing. And I believe that most of us are walking around in our head with things that everybody else told us and rarely have really thought for ourselves. Is it possible I'm unlimited? Is it possible I'm perfect? Is it possible I came in to do something really great? You know, to work with this individual and actually help them wake up and see themselves whole? Is it possible that I'm here to help people kind of pop open the crust on their heart so they can feel their love? Is it possible I'm actually here to show people you don't have to be stuck in a body? you don't have to be stuck sick. You don't have to be stuck limited. You don't have to be stuck under the heaviness of, you know, right now there's a lot of stuff about the government, especially around here and Bernie and socialism and all that, and you have your own stuff. You know, are you stuck anywhere or are you free? Now, a little secret for you because you don't know me. I was actually born free to parents who never gave me an identity. They never told me what was right and what was wrong. They never told me that I was good or bad. They just loved me. And what that meant to me is they set me free. They believed me. They listened to me. The words were, you know, before I was born, Betty Lou, this baby, is a gift from God. And this baby comes in not for us to own her as our own, but it's just for us to provide her a space. And if she needs guidance, we'll do the best we can. But you know what? I never needed guidance. I came in. They talked to me in utero. They talked to me when I came out as though I was an equal. These were innocent people. You know, they weren't all gussied up with all this other stuff. Because of that, it took me a long time to get that most people aren't as free as I am. I mean, it really, I was 45, I had been a therapist for probably close to 10 years before I really got awakened, and I still sometimes am surprised, because we see other people as we see ourselves. So I see you all as free and unlimited and perfect. Because I never was taught not to be. Does that sort of make sense? So when I've been indoctrinated by the world and I start feeling that fear stuff come up, it's sort of like, uh-oh, I just got sucked into fear, into seriousness. That's a good song, sucked into seriousness again. I know that I got sucked in. And I used to tell Robert, pre-Robert, and the groups around me, there were mostly women's groups, but there were families that hung out with me for many years. And I used to tell them, if I start forgetting, just ask me, Betty Lou, what's the truth? And that's all I needed. And then I popped back into the own self-realization. But it's not from somebody outside. It's from inside, which is why I teach listen inside, not outside. Listen inside. Okay, so now I'm going to go to this authentic thing.
Can I?
Yeah,
I'm gonna, before you get off there, because I have something, I mean, I'm working on, I have a concept, but I don't know how to actually say it. So would you address the question that comes up, you know, so we're all created perfect.
Yep.
So the deal is sometimes we do things that don't look perfect, or that don't come out perfect,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes we don't, the way I say it is I don't perfectly express my perfect gifts, okay?
Right.
You know, so what's the perfection in that, or does that take away from the fact that I'm created perfect, or is it something that I actually need to pay attention to and work on and develop the expression of my perfection?
Mostly for me, our job is to let go of everything that doesn't feel whole and true and good. To let go of it, to just erase it. Yes, you can make a note of it. You know, we're going to do who do you pretend to be. You can make a note of it. You can become more conscious of it. But the truth is your perfection was original. It continues to be original, and it will always be original. Now, you can choose, you, any of us, because I didn't finish telling the mud whitewash story.
Yeah.
We can collect.
That's the perfect
we
story.
Can collect.
Yeah, okay.
Everybody's crap projections onto us, the world's projection onto us, the history about what happens when you get old, the history about what happens when you don't have money, or how bad it is to, you know, end your business or your relationship. I mean, you can be a garbage collector and never dump it in the dump. Or what you can do, yeah, go for it. Or what you can do is you can let it go. You know, and that really is, you can wash it off. And for me, life is continually infantizing, which is sanitizing. It's cleaning up the stuff that was mistakenly dumped on each of us. And then, by the way, and then we, of course, dump it on everybody else, too, because then we kind of, you know, feel like everybody.
All right, so the simple, and the diamond essence is the ash is a good thing, but the simple story is that I don't always show up perfect, but that doesn't mean I'm not perfect underneath all of the layers I put on top of myself or all of the disguises I'm wearing.
Right, and actually,
okay.
It's fun to wear disguises.
When
you know that you are imperfectly perfect or perfectly imperfect, I don't know, you know, all those things. When you actually recognize that, you just kind of laugh. Oh yeah, so I'm playing a sickie right now, or I'm playing, you know, a dumb blonde right now, or I'm playing, you know, a society wife right now. I've played a lot of different parts, by the way, of my life. I've played those parts, okay? And do I need to judge them? Okay, a truth. Wherever you judge anything, you get stuck with it until you release your judgment of it. So if you hate it, if you fear it, if you make it wrong and bad, it actually sticks around. And it'll show up in you again and again, or in somebody else around you. So the work is to get back to the skin, the nakedness, the Teflon part of us, where you don't let things get stuck anymore. They just are, I'll call it amusing. So your authentic self, let's go back to discover your authentic self. You're going to have, when we play this game, you're going to have a lot of choices about how you see yourself. My authentic self is loving. That's always a good one to choose, right? Well, what in heck does that mean? You know, does that mean you're not loving when you're tough? Does that mean you're not loving when you're sick? Does that mean you're not loving when, you know, you do something nasty? Well, if you do something nasty, sick, or unkind, laugh about it. Look at it. Watch it. Notice it. And you simply will make a choice about whether or not that's something you want to do again. But it's not something that you have an external moral or ethic from the church or your parents or somebody like that. It literally will return to you that you're absolutely free. Personally, I use my roadmap is if I'm happy, then I'm on it. I'm on the path. If I start letting other people get to me, I'm off the path. If I'm upset about something, I'm not being me. I've decided to be what they want me to be or what somebody else wants me to be. And I label myself. That's what all the diagnoses are, and Republican, Democrat, all that stuff is. You know, your age, that's a great label, that's a great box to put yourself in. And I played that one, I think now it was 2 years ago, but I actually don't remember. It's around the time when I came down here and opened up the center, when I saw myself as an age, and it was about the age at which my father kind of quit all of his volunteer jobs and then, you know, decided to cruise on down, go to sleep, the road of life. And I saw myself doing that. I made up, this is my age, and I saw myself doing that. Isn't it about time you retire, slow down? And what I noticed is how I felt, because definitely if I'm telling myself I am, I am. And I just said, I wrote this thing for a reminder for people down in Contra Costa because I've changed my schedule for them. And I just said to them, you know, I'm happier and busier, mostly busier, than I was. And I said to Robert, when do you think it was? It was right before Robert, 1985. I'm busier now and happier now, more fulfilling, more vibrant now. I'm not saying physically, well, I never worked out. I don't know what my body was like then. I feel as much alive as I did in 1985 when I was 40-something, 43. Okay, so, and that's 30 years ago. That's 40 years, 30 years ago. Yeah, time is irrelevant. So it's here. I know it's here because I tried it. And some of you know I experiment mightily, and I have in my life. It gives me joy to try out a diverse way of being. And so I'm inviting you tonight to start experimenting. And it's not like it's better. You know, I'm the me that I want to be, that I choose to be. I want you to be the me that you want to be. So you get to show up in the body you want, with the energy you want, with the lifestyle you want, with the relationships you want. You get to have that. But we're meant to be free, not programmed by anybody, always from within. In our particular philosophy that we were working with the last 9 years at Unity, the philosophy is that God is you, that you are God, that within you is where God lives. And if you acknowledge that and listen to that, you'll recognize that you're whole and happy and free at choice, unlimited. Yeah. And nothing wrong with you. Nothing to fix, nothing to change, nothing wrong. And if you believe, okay, so I'm going to get ahead of myself and then I'll give you, can ask me questions. They'll give you some processes to do. Joel Osteen. Do you know him? I think not. Okay. So Joel Osteen, O-S-T-E-E-N. Okay. So he is the biggest Christian minister in the United States right now. Television minister. And Joel just finished a book. He's written like 40 or so. Called The Presence of I Am, or The I Am Presence.
Yeah.
And I just heard him interviewed by Oprah. You know, she did Soul Saturday or Sunday or whatever that is. So at any rate, the truth is he just uses the phrase I am. And we're going to do, who do I pretend to be? I pretend to be happy. I pretend to be present. I pretend to be like that. And then who are you really? And, you know, then you own I am, I really am kind of thing. Well, if you just begin to use the phrase I am in a consistent way about anything, you will be that. Mind, body, spirit, finances, relationships.
Positive or negative?
Positive or negative. So if you're saying I'm a loser or I'm not respected or I'm not loved or my life doesn't work or any of that, you literally will show up, you will convince, the God in you will convince you on all levels to be that. All levels to be that. And you'll think it's externally done when really it was internally done. So it's like making a choice to use your godness, your creative power, to create yourself what you want to be. And I can do it on a moment-to-moment basis at this point, you know, because I can talk it. Let's just say it winds up being humorous. When you're drowning in it, you know, and you've told yourself, oh yeah, I'm sick and I can't get up and I don't feel good and all that stuff, so you're coming from that place. When you're drowning in it, you probably aren't laughing. You probably are feeling totally victimized, totally sick, totally limited, and totally at the effect of the frickin' world, right? That's how you feel. But if you get on the other side and begin to just practice, or you put yourself into kind of a practice till it makes perfect, till you return to your own perfection, you'll discover that it will work faster and faster and faster, because you will clear out all the things where you've conned yourself into believing that there really is a limitation to your life. But it requires work.
I call that act as if.
It's act as if, it absolutely is.
It feels really ridiculous.
Yep.
Pretend that you're...
Yes.
What do you call it again?
Act as if. Oh, act as if, yeah.
As
one of those old things we used to think about doing, yeah. But the I am, so just a little bit on the I am, but that's a whole philosophical thing. The I am consciousness presence philosophy is a philosophy that has gone through the ages in terms of religion. There's nothing new about it. And I think the big I am, I don't even know what to call it, theosophy, right now is stationed in Shasta. So if you ever want to go there, you can go and get tons of information. But
Mount Shasta.
Yeah, Mount Shasta. But what I'm really saying to you is keep it simple, because that's who I am, simple. I didn't go to books and learn all this stuff. I heard little bits of this and that, and I try things out. I experiment. And I do it from a happy, non-judgmental place. That's probably the biggest gift I've given myself, is to not be in a position of judging who I am. And by the way, you do make mistakes. And then what you do is you learn from them, and you get excited about them. And then you challenge yourself to try out something different. You feel the feeling. You get the energy. You know, when I'm faking something, when I'm pretending to be something, I can feel the lack of authenticity in me. One of the words we've given up on is conscience. You know, Pinocchio, throwing the nose, telling a lie to herself. But there's a lot of folks. Hello there. Good to see you. There's a lot of folks. You would have loved everything I said so far. Listen to the tape. It's right up your alley. So the difference is that when we don't have a conscience, when we've learned to use the word override with me, when we override, we literally develop a kind of numbness to our own inner integrity when we know something isn't right. Let's just talk about basic things. Food. How many of us, there you go, how many of us actually swallow food, that we know when we take it in our mouth is not good for us.
Oh.
And I'm going to tell you, almost all of us learned to never spit out food. When I learned, it's an old thing, sin within, and the, one of the first things you do is you chew anything you put in your mouth for 2 minutes before you swallow. And if it doesn't taste good, you spit it out. I lost 10 pounds without learning anything else about them within 2 weeks. But I never spit anything out before, and frankly, I just spit something out in the sink 2 days ago. So good, Betty Lou. Good on you. Yeah. So learning how to honor what you know inside is a key to coming back to your integrity, to your I am presence. I mean, it's extremely, extremely important. So discovering your authentic self is actually washing away, sometimes scrubbing. So I'll tell you some of my tricks. So when I first started being a therapist, doing therapy, whatever you want to call that, because, you know, it's for everybody. It's for both people. Do you know that? That when you are playing a part, it's as much for you as it is for the other person, that you get as much out of it, if not more. So when you're being, doing therapy, you really are being and doing therapy as much, if not more, than the person you are therapizing.
And if you get that therapy as fast, if you don't, it takes years.
Did you hear that?
Say that again.
If you get that, then therapy is fast.
You don't stay long.
And if you don't, it takes years. And what I mean, if you get that, it's only up to the therapist to get that, because it doesn't matter if the therapy gets that or not. They're there for them, okay? But
right.
The therapist gets that they're getting healed as well. Things go really, really quickly.
Yeah. That's an interesting piece. But at any rate, so as a therapist, so you come home, I came home, I can remember stuff like this. I came home, and, you know, people would be puking and pooping, that's what I call it, when people are offloading, washing off the crud that they've learned as kids, right? So when they're puking and pooping, if you let it splatter on you, and if you don't know any difference, that's what happens, then when you come home, you need to take a shower. So I learned how to take showers when I come home and mentally, emotionally, physically wash away everything you accumulate. You know, if you're walking around in a passive state, another piece of information, I'm just full of it right now. See?
It's good.
I like having a lot of clients because I get to do all this, right? And I actually had somebody not show up today because they were ill, so I've been sending them information. But so the deal is when you're accumulating stuff, you have to find a way to clear. Because when you're thinking you're being nice and loving, part of this in response to you, thank you. When you think you're being nice and loving, you're very often eating their toxic material. Mmm. Sorry, look at that.
Well, but my throat just...
Exactly. You're very often taking on their stuff when you're being nice. When you're listening, you're buying into it, you're believing it, you're taking a part of it, you're feeling their energy. So guess who needs to clean up? You do. You need to clear it. And what I've discovered is that very often people take it into themselves and literally hang on to it, and they hang on to it until the next time you see them again, or they're concerned about it all night, or on some level they haven't found an active way to clear it. Another story. Just little bits of stuff from various places. So Jesus, Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. Jesus showed up there, this was in the 1900s, 1910,
century, yeah.
Something like that. Jesus showed up, and one of the things he did was he taught the missionaries at that time how to constantly extend love, extend the energy of love, blessing. I mean, you massage therapists, you think that it's the color pink. It doesn't matter how you use it, just you're extending. But if you stop for a moment and you literally open yourself and allow in that stuff, you'll start taking it on. And so the work really is to always be extending love. And then there's no place for toxic material to come into you. You're not feeling sad or sorry for anybody, ever. You're extending love to them. You're sending high regard to them. You're saying, basically, I know you're perfect inside, even if outside looks like a mess. And that person can be in a coma. I can remember all kinds of interesting work I've had in my life. I started out as a kid doing volunteer work with all kinds of disabled people and elderly people. And for me, it was learning how to always love and never stop loving.
And by the way, extending love is not the same as putting up an energetic shield. okay? An energetic shield.
Not defending yourself.
A lot of especially body workers, but a lot of therapists have been taught to shield themselves. They don't take on other people's energy. Mm-hmm. And so that's doing two things. That's acknowledging that you're number one, you're vulnerable, so you need protection, which is really bad when you let down your shield because something else will get in, okay? It's also saying that whatever they have is real, so you need to guard against it. So it's very different to be extending love. It's just extending love. And that's an outward flow of energy that's not against anything. It's just loving, and it washes away anything that isn't love.
Yeah. So one of my phrases is, love created you as love for the purpose of loving. And so when you remember who you really are, if you remember that you were created by love, as love, that's who you are, an orb of love, for the purpose of loving, when you remember that, you will always be extending love. No matter what your external behavior is, no matter what your words are, no matter what your physical situation is, you'll always be extending love. There won't be any ounce of anything else. So you won't take on other stuff. It won't be attracted to you. There won't be a space for it to come in and reside in you and make you believe that you are other than love. You are love itself. So going back to the authenticity part, I didn't finish the diamond story. The picture came many, many years ago. Pre-Robert. I have pre-Robert and post-Robert. So pre-Robert is, if you imagine that you are a diamond essence, if you imagine that you are love itself or light, you know, then what happens is, in utero, which is when it first starts, any thought that anybody had, mom and dad primarily, about themselves or about you being in utero, you would have taken in as your first experience of, let's call it affirmation or defamation, is that the other word? In other words, positive or negative. What you heard, what you felt, the energy that was around you, you would have begun literally being imprinted, programmed, those kinds of words, by what was around you. And then when you're born, you know, then they're actually saying things, oh, damn, I wish it was a boy, or, you know, she's skinnier, you know, his farts stink, or whatever. I mean, all those things that people think and say about babies, and do to babies, especially do today. And today we have all that stuff on TV. And the kids sitting in front of the television. Okay, all that stuff, positive and negative, you take in because you're just a wide open being, spirit, you know, hey, I'm just here to hang out in this wonderful heavenly place, not realizing that this place is filled with toxic material. And mostly I'm not talking about physical toxins. That's what I see most of the people around here focused on, is the physical toxicity. But the physical is the heaviest, densest stuff that comes from the mental, emotional, spiritual toxicity. So it's like, how do we clean that up? Well, then what we do is we affirm. We say, what a nice baby. Isn't she pretty? I love her eyes. You know, I like how she walks. I like how I help. And then we get whitewashed over the toxic stuff. And there is layer upon layer upon layer of mud, negative and positive. And we're waddling around in what I call these big M&Ms. They're big coating after coating of stuff. And most people are afraid to wash off even one layer because what's going to show up is the dirt. And they're thinking that all that cruddy stuff, I mean, somebody said this to me the other day, that she asked someone to come to talk to me, and that person was afraid that what was going to come out is an exposure of all their bad doings, all their negative thoughts. And so if you're walking around thinking there is bad in you, you know, all children were born in sin, you've heard that one, right? That's the biggest joke there was. It means off the mark. Well, all children have been splattered on, probably at their age of birth, often by the priests and that culture, too. So it really is a process of cleaning, washing away, dumping, I call it forgiving, releasing, erasing, so that you can get clear to see that you are already whole. And yes, the healing that we call it, you know how we're focused on healing, again, especially in this culture, the healing is really the return to wholeness, to your natural state of perfection. You were created perfect, to be perfectly perfect in all the ways that you show up. And so we don't have to fancy it up. We don't have to wear a star. We don't have to be brave. We don't have to be, you know, a CEO or have a lot of money or get a good... We don't have to do anything. We're already just fine the way we are. And for some reason, I'll add a few more, and this is totally inspired by Prem, actually. I'll give you credit. So what if, just imagine, what if you showed up in a world where you were totally happy and at peace with yourself? What if you showed up that way and you suddenly looked around and you see everybody else is too? That we're just really at home with ourselves, all cool, all good, and with each other. And do you see that you don't have to defend or protect anymore? Because everybody else is fine too. And nobody's comparing because there's nothing to compare. You feel fine the way you are, so you don't even need to pay attention to how, wow, I love who you are, and you are, and we're all different, we're all unique. So the real gift we're giving is the gift of our real self, our authentic self. And if along the way, since you've noticed that most of us are still in an undoing process, we're not there yet, we're not... The world calls it enlightened, by the way. And we're not in that way. If you notice that you're there, but you notice that we're all moving toward letting go, what happens? What actually happens? Good. It's the bathroom on the right. So what actually happens when other people who are wanting to be happy and real are working through their process? You know, we just love each other the way we are. We're just walking right with each other. We're not adding to their misery, and we're not making them feel sad or bad or pushing them along their way or trying to get them to be different. We're just enjoying each other. It's all good. It's all good. So are you sort of getting, I mean, I've gone on and on and on. So who do you pretend to be and who are you really? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Even. So what I'm going to suggest you do is I'm going to suggest you get into a pair with somebody. And what you do is a process. And I'm just going to pretend a little bit of process. So I'm going to do, can I do you?
Absolutely.
I'm going to do Robert. So at the top, who do you pretend to be? And then I get to ask this, I'll say 10 times. If you want to ask it more, you can. So Robert, who do you pretend to be?
Human being.
I write down human being and I say, thank you. Robert, who do you pretend to be?
Sick.
Thank you. Robert, who do you pretend to be?
Happy.
Robert, who do you pretend to be?
Totally capable.
Robert, who do you pretend to be?
Oh, that's interesting. Why?
Now, I'm going to stop for a second here. I'll probably go on about 10 times. The qualities right now of the listener are more important than what the speaker says. Because the listener must be absolutely a safe place. No thoughts, no judgment. You will discover some of your thoughts and judgments come up, and I'm inviting you just to add them mentally to what the other person said. Don't think about them. Don't try and figure out where they came from. Just imagine, you know, he said six, so I have a little question there. Six. Wonder what that means. And I just add it to that, write it down, and it's done. And then I open up somewhere. You saw me take a deep breath. I took a deep breath so that I could clear. Absolutely clear. And be present with what was and ask the question from that very clear place. In a way, it was what you were talking about, inquiry. And what I'll tell you is that person will become more and more authentic from whatever their place is as you ask and clear yourself to be absolutely present for the next answer. And then what I would do is I would say, thank you. And then I would say, who are you really, Robert?
A teacher.
Thank you. Who are you really?
Unlimited.
Thank you. Who are you really?
Love.
Now, again, I would do it about 10 times. Now, what I want you to know is that my job, and it is essential we learn how to do this, is to clear my thoughts about whatever his answer was. That's why I write it down. To clear my thoughts so I don't hold it. And I'm going to tell you in your own life, the more you write down what you might tend to hold, the more likely it is you're going to clear, you're going to erase and create an open space of creation. And that's where your creation is. That's where your authentic self is in moment-to-moment creation of that which you are.
So it's in listening, openness, and listening?
It's listening, but not listening with your brain. It's not thinking about it, because most people listen with their brain, and they, listening, now what does that mean, and what might that mean for him, and how does that mean for him? It's not that at all. I write it down, just the word I write down, and then my job is to open my mind. The other thing I heard before I came here, I have never, as far as I remember, talked to this group in this setting because I teach it so naturally on a regular basis. You never leave anything, you never take anything out of this room from what happened here. And that means you don't think about it later. You don't work on it later. If there's something from this that stirs you up to work on, go home and work on it. By the way, for me, that's confidentiality. It's having confidence or faith that the other person is whole. Yes?
I still haven't gotten, the question, what do you pretend to be? My first response, I looked at it and I said, okay, I looked inside and I said, I'm not pretending.
Great, and I would write
if
down.
If I were pretending, if I could say that I was pretending about something, what would I say about
it? So work with me.
Huh?
So work with me. We're going to do pairs. You work with me. Okay? You work with me. And start with me and ask me who I pretend to be. That might open your mind. The thing is that all of this is an illusion. All of it. I'm just going to tell you straight out ahead of time. All of it is an illusion. We're all pretending everything all the time. That's what our minds do, is they are big pretense manufacturers, and we fall into the, whatever you want to call it, the trance.
And then I'm pretending to not be pretending.
Yeah.
I'm pretending to be authentic.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I don't think it. See, you think. You're a big thinker. I have a big thinking too. But I have learned if I want to get to the bottom of who I am, that which I am, I won't think. It literally will bubble up to the surface and I just say whatever word is there. I write it down. I let it bubble up. I write it down. I don't try to think about it, figure out why it came, what it's about. I just write it down to clear it.
And a lot of times, I've done this several times.
A lot
of times, the same word will come up on both lists.
Mm-hmm.
And that means lots of different things to me. But again, part of it is all made up. But part of it, sometimes I realize, well, I really do pretend. Well, actually, I really am. But when I get out, it's like, so it's all my own internal process as long as she's not judging it. As long as she's not saying, oh yeah, that's good, or what does that mean, or I agree, or wow, or, just absolute total neutrality so that I get to have the process.
And when two people are joined in any judgment, it sticks.
Say that a little differently.
Wherever two or more are joined, all things are. They exist. That literally this universe is made up, you said this years ago better, this universe is made up because we created an agreement. Two or more people create an agreement that this is so, and then it became so. This is a table. Two of us made up this was a table, and it became a table. Two of us made up that you have some illness, now you have an illness. Two of us made up that I have a body, so now I have a body. Pre-Robert, I pretty much didn't have a body, but that's another whole story. So try it out. That's all I'll say, Shale. Try it out. I want all of us to try it out and experiment. About 10 times, who do you pretend to be? And you, the asker, you're going to notice. You're just going to notice you have thoughts when the other person answers. And I'm going to ask when you have thoughts, just write the word down and see if you can let those thoughts go so you're wide open for whatever the next answer is.
So we're writing it down first. So
no. No, I said, Robert, who do you pretend to be? He gave me an answer. I wrote down an answer.
Yes. On his book.
On his book, yes. Yep.
Okay.
On his book.
Got it.
Yep. Okay? So are you ready? By the way, you weren't here, sorry. But everybody's getting into a pair, and I've asked to work with Shale, and that's just because Shale said he doesn't pretend. So I'll show him how I pretend. Every day, all the time, Shale.
Choose to be chosen.
I pretend to know what the hell
I'm
doing, okay? Do you know that I pretend that?
I can understand that.
All right. I mean, I open my mind, I know nothing, and whatever comes through, I share. Okay? Come on over. 10 minutes.
Great, Mike, you and I.
So about 10 times with each question, and then you do it for the other person.
Yep.
So you can ask me and write down the person you want me to go first.
So how about
just wait, get out of there.
So
you
can ask. So that means you have to write down like that.
You have to ask
first,
or be
asked
first?
In love. And then supposed to
be asked.
Oh,
I'll ask first. Okay,
all giving, prosperous, full, full,
right.
infinitely full.
Oh, goodness.
Well, I suppose they can say I'm who I be, but I'm not.
we'll hang you with that one for a moment.
Yeah.
Last question. Who are you with me?
Oh, I'm really curious. I'm really full of wonder. I'm really open.
I really am.
Who are you,
creative and thankful.
Who are you really?
Thank you.
Who are you?
Who are you really?
Who are you really?
Okay.
How will do
who are you?
Who are you really?
Following her.
Who are you really?
Opposites of the spectrum.
The spectrum. You need to feel like.
Who are you really?
They're really almost kind of like a long drum.
And just become kind of important.
Cool.
So I'll give
who are you really?
I'll put here for surely. I keep my notes.
Yeah.
Open
to
it.
Yeah, open. Yeah. Okay.
I keep notes for all my classes.
You don't have anything over here.
Right?
I want my words. You get your words. I could have your words, but
you could pretend to be Shale.
I believe that's one of the places I went, because I was Shale.
Oh, I got it.
Pretty nice to be you, actually.
Two matchups. Can you hear?
I like it.
Those two matchups. This one, I think they know.
Seven.
Well, this
half
is
an
kind
hour.
Of match up.
No,
what is
I can see it.
Oh, look at
May.
That. There
I
is
think
a
match up.
No, don't worry.
Calendar.
Oh, look at this.
This thing wraps up this month.
Wow, isn't this interesting?
Oh, we stop for this month, and then we start again in June with something different. So
okay.
We're going to go into
well,
something probably more about,
how they line
this
up.
Is kind of an intro to it,
and
more about self-discovery and looking at all the component parts of ourselves, both in terms of intellect, emotions, finances, I mean, a way that we show up in the world, because all of us have our own way that we've shown up here, and then finding a way to actually love and appreciate that. So that's what the summer is going to be about.
And yes, we're out of town most of May. That's one of the reasons we're taking a
sabbatical.
Yeah. When are you taking a sabbatical?
Mostly
in May. We're gone for 3 weeks, and then we'll just skip out and like,
can we close the door?
I'd like to close the door. Thank you.
Yeah.
And he put on a jacket, and you're. Oh yeah, we got
that.
I
almost
jacket,
said,
so, yeah.
Who I really am is cold.
But see, that's a really good thing too.
Yeah.
And by the way, the people actually, I want to hear your response. But the people who survive, like mostly Native Americans or people who have control of their minds, the way they don't feel cold. Is they don't actually use that as an I am. They don't use I am cold. Mm-hmm. They shift their thought to something else. Mm-hmm.
Could you give us a little like give us an example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sure. they wouldn't own the thought.
Who I am is I'm adaptable. Because it doesn't matter what the conditions are, I can adapt so that I'm at peace or comfortable physically, mentally, emotionally in all circumstances.
Yeah, or I'm spirit, I'm not a body, or I'm warm, you know, I'm sitting by a fire. Yeah, I mean, you know, it depends on how much you believe your mind is who you are, or your mind is in charge, and how much you know that you are in charge, and you're not your mind. You have thoughts, but you're not that. So I was curious, how was this?
Oh.
How was this?
Well, I thought it was really interesting. There's a lot of parallels between Shirley's and mine. For example, they line up. And if, like, there's an order, total order. So I noticed that immediately.
So what do you think that is? Because we make that up, too.
Well, it's a synchronicity or something. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Synchronicity or something. I mean, I discovered somewhere in here, I said,
Oh, the first thing I said, who do I pretend to be? I said you, because I just totally just, I just melded into him. And then sometimes it's hard for me to even create a separate identity.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's cool. And I think when we're together with people, we are joined
mm-hmm.
in mind, body, and spirit.
I
yeah.
do exactly the same.
Yeah, so, mm-hmm. yeah. So did anybody feel good about your pretend to be as well as you did about who you are really?
Yeah.
Some people
yeah.
don't like who they pretend to be. They want to get rid of it.
I noticed
or
that I have a reason for every pretend to be.
You have a reason for it. That's good.
I mean, I would otherwise I wouldn't pretend to be it. So good, bad, or indifferent, you know. I mean, I'm actually probably equally good at all of pretending. And just some of them are ones that, well, why do I do that? I mean, it's like it's, yeah. But there's always a payoff, a secondary gain, a reason for it somewhere. So,
it feels like there's, you know, truth also in the pretending, because sometimes I am strong, sometimes I am loving, sometimes, but not all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm pretending,
mm-hmm.
but, yeah. So there's like that kernel of truth in it at times. I am conscious, or I am aware, or I am playful.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm pretending.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah.
And I like this process because just having that question over and over and over, just like a drop
deeper.
Into, yeah. Without mm-hmm. thinking, like you said, the word just come out. Without,
yep.
Oh, really? That was a surprise that came out, especially toward the end.
Yeah, some people, when I've done this, sometimes we go, you know, for as long as the questioner wants to ask,
mm-hmm.
because it's still evoking things, you know?
Yeah.
It's like stirring up stuff from the bottom. And so you just keep asking, you know,
right.
10, 15 minutes,
right.
over and over and over.
I remember spending a whole day being asked, who are you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And asking it back.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. And did some of you notice that it came from your thinking mind? And for some of you, it just kind of, like you kind of,
mm-hmm.
I said it bubbles up for me, but you kind of said it too?
Yeah.
Where it just starts bubbling up, it's just right there and right there and right there. And some of you wanted to think about it a while? Yeah. What you notice, Shirley?
That in the pretend side, I mean, I just, if I did this for 15 minutes, I could probably get to some pretty awful stuff that I've thought about myself from time to time, but I really don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
good
not
awareness.
Finding it particularly useful.
Okay.
So,
good awareness.
You know, I mean, what's the point? At some point it might be, but it doesn't serve me now to spend time looking really deeply at my what I consider to be not things that I don't like about myself. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to.
So you sort of centered, or you sort of channeled your answers in a certain direction?
I wouldn't say centered. It was a conscious choice to be a little bit lighter.
Mm-hmm.
with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think anything. I just chose to be lighter.
Okay.
And I didn't suppress anything. I just chose not to go
yeah.
there.
I hear you.
And I could see that doing this for 15 minutes would probably bring up some crappy stuff.
mm-hmm.
So
when you do this process over and over again, there's no longer crappy stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank
there's
you.
No longer judgment about
Thank
it. It's all interesting, laughable, whatever you want to call it. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're still doing, is we're still hanging on to our judgment of what was or is or whatever we think is the sinful stuff in life kind of thing, instead of just saying, oh, that's interesting, so I tried that out, and I tried that out, and I tried that out. You know, I'm not stuck with it, it's not who I am really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the effort to try and keep from being that.
Yeah,
it just kind of cleans itself off because it didn't belong to you in the first place. That's why I told that story. Really was never yours. It's our accumulation of the garbage of a mistaken humanity, misperceptions. And we're at this wonderful not everybody feels this way, this wonderful time where we get to be the ones who clean up the garbage. Kali,
yeah.
You know, the goddess Kali, you know, just be it and clear it.
When I do affirming prayer,
yeah,
some of that stuff comes up, and I usually just sort of acknowledge it and transform it. Say, yeah, not that, it's this, and
that's good.
It's
good process.
Yeah, it's very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I spend a lot of time on it.
We all have our own tool or technique to do this stuff. Like I talked about washing, you know, in the shower. And showering it away and letting it go down the drain, you know. Or some of you know from me, I flush the cosmic toilet. You've heard me say that, right? Well, that's one of my processes when I, you know, that I tell people, you know. So go ahead, tell me anything you want to tell. I'm just going to keep flushing the cosmic toilet. I don't write it down. I don't keep it for you. I'm not going to remember it. I'm letting it go. It's just something that I've been given to do for us, the great all. So, Gloria, you were going to say something a few minutes ago.
Could be.
Well, I just want to say, who do you pretend to be when you're asking the question? I was noticing that no matter what you were asking me, I was just going to tell you the truth. I was just going to tell you who I really am.
Uh-huh.
But you asked me, who am I pretending to be? I'm telling, you know, but then again, okay, then I can see also, see, this is it. This is why, like, you know, pretending or what? Because I'm just baffled. I'm just saying. Here I am. I'm a boy, become a man.
Mm-hmm.
I have these things, and this is to me. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about like humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're predisposed at birth. You're imprinted at birth with certain neurological predispositions. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it's like it's been shown, and it's like, you know, you can overcome it with consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that you are wanting certain things, and maybe you don't get it as a kid, and so you just develop other strategies, and so then you pretend. You're going to hang out and pretend for a while until you can get around, back around to the truth of what you really want. And so all I would say, I mean, and so the exercise was just, so basically at that point I became willing to admit that I was pretending, everything was
good.
Pretend. So that was kind of interesting. No, I don't know if that made any sense, but I've seen it better.
I don't remember. I'm going to look it up when I go home. The origin, the Latin origin of pretend, but tendare means to care for, and pre means ahead of time, right? So but I'm going to go look to see, and I'll let you guys know next week.
Tense is also context, so it's pre-context, or pre, you know, tense.
Okay. I'm actually going to go look, because the origin of words like pretend have a lot to do with how we missed and have forsaken or forgotten the original meaning of words. And once we find out what the original meaning is, it's always going to take us back to the origin, to our creation of our life, our creation of our roles that we play, our creation of the life experience we have. So whether you aren't really or you are pretending to be, you'll discover that it all kind of merges. And for me, it just lightens up. It just lightens up. Okay, so I pretended. Okay, so I'm really. I mean, I don't even know there's a difference. I mean, that's where I am. It's just an exercise.
I just sort of wanted to just express it because this is what I was expressing. So it's like the example of a child who just actually just wanted to be heard. Like, why would you speak? Because you're expecting somebody to comprehend and respond in some way that is like good. It feels like, oh, okay, I've heard, and it's like things are happening the way that my words connected, you know,
yeah,
the thing up, right? Okay, and in a lot of cases, you know, such as in mine, and I know a lot of children, that it wasn't. And so then, for example, in my case, so then now I'm angry and I'm demanding, and it's like, I just want to be heard! That's my sincere, that's my one of my deepest sort of like, whoa, you know, like, ah, you know, please hear me, you know. Anyway, I'm just trying to, you know, show you. I mean, or just to show that. Because the truth of it seems angry. The child or that or I seem angry. Am I pretending that? I don't know if I'm pretending that. But the truth in there is a genuine wish to to be heard, mm-hmm. and have it be dialogue, and to have it flow and go somewhere that's good, you know. Anyway, I just want to qualify that.
It's the lion that roars. It's the lion that roars. It's expending energy so you will be heard.
Right. It doesn't work out.
You
wanted to do, that's true.
I can imagine you totally. A roaring lion. Doesn't surprise me. Now, it's my choice about whether or not I'm afraid, Shale. Do you understand?
Right.
That's up to me.
That's a very good point.
Thank you.
Generally, it's been pinned upon me.
I know.
And even after
You know, one of the things about kids, since you're talking about kids, is they're infinitely creative. I mean, that's one of the pieces of our childhood that I would love, at least my child, I would love to reclaim, to be as creative now as I was then. And you talk about pretending. It's sort of like, you know, I'll use your example. I want to be heard. Okay, well, you know, nobody seems to be listening, so let me try this out. I'll pretend to be sad and quiet. Well, nobody's listening to me. That didn't work. Well, I'll pretend to be, you know, obnoxious, you know, and get in trouble. You know, does that work? Or I'll pretend to be, and they'll keep trying stuff out until there's success somewhere, or until they finally say, I can't pretend anymore. And I think that we do that, but not nearly as consciously. I have to believe that these kids, I mean, there are a lot of kids that I'll say, does that really work? you know, because they know they're playing. You know, and we're, I think we're doing the same thing. I think we're still playing it out. We're actually pretending certain moods or thoughts or approaches or ideas or beingness in an attempt to
get what we want.
What we want, whatever it is that we want.
Yep.
So I like noticing that I pretend in order to get what I think that I want to have, and I actually want to be more conscious and celebrate the fact that I'm creative enough to keep trying options until something works.
When you said that, Gloria. Gloria's being quiet, so I want to let her talk.
Okay. Thank you. There's definitely things percolating in me around this, and one is that for me to see both sides of this is for me to get that I'm none of this.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that I need to let go of this definition, which would give me some sense of who I am, and to surrender that into something that actually is beyond words, is
mm-hmm.
something that I shut down long ago while I was busy trying to figure out the right way to make those connections so that I would be able to be connected and not doubt my value and that I was a connected, integral part of life.
Mm-hmm.
Without which life would not be life fully.
And you're important.
And that is something that it's like, because I've tried so much of this, I actually kind of feel good covering it up right now, that this doesn't get to that place, which is kind of, I think that, I forgot which of those Star Wars movies it is, but that one where the lone spaceman is out there floating on a tendril, you know, like this one that's out there alone. Anyway, I'm just, yeah, that's there. And then also, like, I think about as a teacher for the children who were not so quick to speak, that if you give them a puppet or something to speak for them, then that gets sometimes a lot closer to the truth, right? So anyway, all of that is just sort of finding its way in me. So to consciously play out, I think is a lot of fun.
I just realized from what you're saying, I used some words when I was, I think, mostly doing the really part, like space. I don't have words. A number of times I said, I don't have words.
Yeah.
Or, I don't remember what I said here, but you remember. I mean, I had a hard time reining myself in to put a word to it or define anything. And then I thought about maybe what this is teaching, because I'm always looking at expanded views of everything. Maybe what this is teaching is to have us not attached to anybody's word, including us.
Totally.
To have us keep letting go. So here's a word, let it go. Here's a word, let it go. So I was thinking about a young girl, 10-year-old, who I saw yesterday, and what I realized is that she tried out a lot of different acts with me, probably based on her mother, her father, the teachers at school, and stuff like that. And what I noticed is she went from serious or having a problem to, because I wasn't attached. I mean, the first time I saw her, there's nothing to get attached to because, you know, we're all just trying out stuff. And it wound up, Gloria, that she wound up lying there on the couch and just kind of laughing and giggling at me. And I thought, how perfect. That was a perfect place to go. You know? No attachment.
Right.
And she just had to figure out that I wasn't going to judge her. I wasn't going to diagnose, because she's seen a lot of other people. I wasn't going to diagnose or say, oh, really about that? You know how we do? We do it with each other. Oh, really? I'm so sorry. Or, that sounds terrible. Or, gosh, I wish. Instead of, what would happen if we just let everybody be free and not get attached to these words, which are boxes, which are our closest facsimile to being able to express our experience, but it's not the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's exactly because I've been playing, you know, I think I've told you I'm
a little louder so he can hear you.
That I've been saying death makes it harder.
But okay, sorry.
That's okay, but it's okay. I'm going to be doing a talk in about a month on, and it's called Surrendering into Crisis Without Collapsing. And the way that I'm picturing that often is like there's one mountaintop here and another mountaintop here, and then there's that space in between where there's nothing beneath. And I often will write over their faith or unconditioned consciousness or the open heart, the open mind. So this process of just continually embracing whatever shows up. And I do this little thing where I have a heart, you know, it looks like the broken heart. You know what everybody knows, like when you have the heart that looks like that. And this is something that came to me many, many years ago where it's like there's always a you and an I. You know, there's always some and, some and or unknown something between us, some sort of separation. But I play with it a lot, and if that thing, once you start to really open to the other, right, and if you continue to open to the other, then what looks like the brokenness becomes the wings. So this whole little thing here is like one wing, and then that's the other wing, and the job is just to embrace
the wingedness.
Everything.
I know.
And then there's nothing left except nothing.
Mm-hmm. I was just reading something on the internet. Some people were saying all of the difficulties that you're having that keep on occurring, that is your freedom. And it's just, and it's like that's the breaking of your heart.
Oh, that's
like
good.
Losing it. It's like you face that, and that's your freedom. It's like your freedom.
Nice.
And it's over and over and over again. So this is, but I've had fun figuring it out here and in my guts, and now I'm like really needing to be practicing it.
Mm.
You know, it's not enough for me just to figure it out. Anyway, that's where I'm at.
The other thing I realized is, for me, context is one of my favorite words for a lot of reasons. It keeps me safe if I understand the context. So, but context has everything to do with this. Because when I look at who do I pretend to be and who am I really, if you're trying to understand me, you actually have to understand what world I see myself in. In other words, am I right now bothered by, focused on, defined by my body. You know, am I thinking of myself in the context of a member of this community, or am I thinking of myself, you know, well, you don't have words. Well, it's kind of like, so what's the context? Well, the context is unlimited. Well, when you're unlimited, there's no words to describe that, you know? And so there are different times when I'll have different responses depending on how I'm seeing or experiencing myself at that point in time. So it's really neat what you said, like, about the girl, not to be attached to whatever it is. When we do this process, you don't get attached to any of that, because sometimes what happens is I actually play it out, and then I shift context because I don't get stuck.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Can I share something? Mm-hmm. I think that this kind of echoes what everybody's saying, but I think that when Cheryl spoke, it kind of triggered something. So I had some big challenges last year, and I came in to start working with Robert maybe January or February.
Louder.
Louder? Oh.
Okay. I can
usually
hear.
I'm too loud. So I wanted just to say something, that I've been in a place of stillness and very low judgment. And of course it comes and goes, you know. But it's been like this for, I don't know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. And I think very clearly some of it has to do with the exercise that you're giving me. But it also has to do with me going back into that state. It's not quite that nirvana state that I went into after the car accident, but it's a very close, where I'm very dialed in and very present. And so, yes, I wish to give Robert credit for these particular exercises when I forget what they're called, that kind of thing. But I also know that I must be really ready.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because I'm not being a judgmental bitch.
Right.
And, you know, I came from a super, you know, judgmental family, and I've spent my whole life working on that. And, you know, again, it comes and it goes. And so for 2 months, I think it's safe to say that I have been, like, it's down, like, vast, 90%. I don't know, but it doesn't really matter. So that, for example, I was in LA for quite some time, 5 or 6 weeks, and I just came back totally refreshed. I was staying with someone who's an extraordinary person, but this beautiful being has also had extraordinary trauma that very few people could probably fathom. I'll just say that she's the child of a Catholic priest, and I'll leave it at that. And her trauma has been extraordinary, and so being around her can be very challenging, even though I madly love her as a being. But the trauma is so extreme, and I know that I didn't feed into it. I just watched and observed, and I think you could say I was in a state of being.
Mm-hmm.
Just a state of being, as opposed to wanting to do the hook, being that little thing that we all do, that little judgmental thing. And that's all I really wanted to say.
Good.
Thank you.
Prem, were you going to say something a while ago?
Oh, it was when you were saying all the different ways child tries to get attention. Well, one that I didn't do, but I always enjoyed it, and I was a teacher, was the class clown. You know, the kid was really funny, or some people are, and they get attention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another way.
So here's I was going to ask if you had one word, two words for your authentic self, each of you. But what just came to me was perhaps there's a way in which each of us need to come inside and ask how we support our own authenticity, our own reality. How do you support that which you are? How do you create safety, might be another way to say it, for being you, for your being?
You know, to respond to that, set authentic self. Well, this is interesting, because that's like somewhere between the two questions that were being asked. And I said, authentic self, and I said, this word, you know, these various different words, it's like, yeah. That's what it said.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? hilarious.
No, it's good. It's good. Got it. So how do you create safety for being really you? What choices do you make? Or how have you done? Yeah, Gloria.
Well, I like the context of tonight, which is this place of allowing it to be washed away in every moment.
Mm.
And then I know that if I have something hanging out here, it's very sticky, and anything, stuff gets caught to it. You know, and because what happens as soon as I start to be really present, and I feel like a kind of like when I don't have all this idea of who I am or who you are, right? If I don't come with ideas of who I am, who you are, what we're doing here, what this was, what that was, then it's like the naked presence sometimes is like I immediately want to go, I want to put it back in some kind of form.
Thank you.
Because it touches my uh-oh center.
Uh-huh.
Uh-oh, something's wrong. Uh-oh. You know, that part of me that the programmed body, the programmed soma, the programmed mind, that is holding on to who I thought I was and who I pretended to be in order to have me have some sort of sense that I'm safe. And so this unwinding, undoing is like
unwinding, good.
It is that when I start to feel the uh-oh, I don't do what I would always do before. I give it.
Mm.
I stop that process of what that leads to next. I question the crunch in my belly. I question how I want everybody to go away, or I wish I wasn't seeing that person. I try to have superpowers to change everything so that this uh-oh won't get triggered. But now I'm realizing that the uh-oh is what's sitting on top of my me. And that's why I feel like I've gotten over-identified with the body that did go through a lot of abuse. And so when I keep pulling that stuff back in on me, it gives me a familiar situation of like, uh-oh, something is wrong, something is broken, something needs to be fixed.
It's really good for you.
And it's me because this is where I feel it.
Yeah.
So then I really have reinforced my sense that something is wrong with me. Nobody gets how it is for me. And every time I try for them to get it, they can't fully get it. Therefore, I'll just stay here by myself and keep creating pain and suffering and wrongness in the body,
yeah,
so that I'll be secure and die that way. And I've made some commitments to sitting through all the uh-ohs, and I have a lot of them that I could be pointing to right now in terms,
yeah,
of my body and,
yeah,
symptoms and,
yeah,
shit like that.
Yeah.
And so that's no longer the center of my universe.
You know, the,
yeah,
old kid ditty, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I'm going to eat some worms.
Right. And look, you can see them on the X-ray.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's our identification.
Well, and that's that sticky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's why I love this idea of just always being washed clean and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And how not to mistake my own immobility and neutrality for not having needs and being neutral. Because sometimes I can just think I'm feeling nothing, that it's neutral, and feeling nothing is not neutral.
You might try that word mistake, because I describe mistake a lot of different ways, but right now, I stake my life on it.
I stake my life on my mistake, on
my misperception. I stake my life. That's the mistake.
Right.
I'm staking my life on something that's not real.
Exactly.
I stake my life on something that's not real. I have a misperception.
Commenting on what we do.
No, I'm just saying that word mistake. We have that word mistake, we have defined in an interesting way as an error, okay? But it's literally putting our stake into identifying with something that is not true about who we are. We are perfect. We are infinite. But we're staking our life on the fact that we're a body or a human being. We're staking our life on the fact that we're old or that we're uneducated or that we're poor. Or, you know, we stake our life on our self-identification. We chose the identification.
So I call it stake. I'm hearing also stakeholder.
Yes, we're stakeholders.
A stakeholder, which would be like I'm invested.
Yep.
I would see it more like I'm a stakeholder.
Yep.
I'm invested in these ideas that something is really wrong with me. It has been forever, or I would have been sitting on Jesus' lap with all those other kids.
That's right. That's exactly it.
So it, yeah. So that
This whole authenticity thing, on purpose I stirred up, on purpose, because mostly we've heard about it. We hear about authentic self, but the truth is, what is that for you? Where are you with it? And what I'm going to add to it is know that you can always change whatever you think it is. So it's an ever-changing, ever-unfolding, ever-creative, dynamic experience that you get to choose. You get to choose. Nobody else. Nobody else can tell you who you are. They try to, because if they can fix you in a position, then they can do the relative position that they line up with you. Are they the same? Are they different? Are they higher? All that. So you get to redefine yourself. You get to choose your authenticity anytime you want. And that's where we shift into the I am presence. When you start I am-ing yourself, you'll discover how absolutely fluid you are. You can change from I'm sick to I'm well like that, and literally everything follows it. I'm depressed, I'm happy, like that, you can change. Sounds really good that it's sick, but it's
Can I share one last thing?
Yeah, you'll be the last up, unless you're not.
So
sounds really, you said it sounds really good, but it's not, is that what you said?
No, she's the last up, unless she's not.
Oh, unless she's not. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So for me, the clarity is very simple, and that for me to be genuine is to not have judgment. And when I don't have judgment, I'm in a state of well-being and bliss, and I'm always safe.
Yeah.
That's me. That's just me.
So have some if you like it, people. By the way, that's what life is. We all are offering a smorgasbord of possibilities. Try it out. If you like it, keep it. If you don't, change it. I love life because of that. Okay, I know we left this with not total 100%. Ah, I'm totally at bliss and I totally understand everything. And that's purposeful. You know, let it be fluid. Try it out.
Did you say, I was totally bliss out and I don't understand anything? Is that what you're saying?
There is that too.
Close to that. By the way, just so you don't know, Shale does not hear everything you say, okay? Period.
I forget. Thank you.
Yeah.